Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And we are here in the studio for another beautiful Thursday night in downtown Sherman Oaks, California, as we sit here on the top of our 36-story building looking down on, what's high school is that? Who knows?
Notre Dame.
I do that. See, I say that almost every week. I love that school.
My daughter went there.
Did she?
Yes, indeed.
Wow. I went to a Catholic school, actually, when I was a little kid. But once I got bigger, I got smarter.
As many of our friends, Stuart Rosebrook from True West Magazine.
There you go.
Is a graduate. Yes.
There you go. So, there, you know. Yeah, Notre Dame is beautiful. Beautiful campus. So, you guys are ever down off of whatever street you are here, Woodman and Riverside, take a look. Notre Dame is a gorgeous school. It's got wide open airways. It looks like an old church mission.
Yes.
So anyway, you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, and I am in studio tonight with two very insane people. The hysteria will soon start. Before we get started with that, though, let me give you a few little tidbits here. Of course, Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books. And if you're a new writer, if you're really unfamiliar with what's going on, you would do yourself a favor by giving us a call. Our number is 805-795-3165, and we can walk you through all the way from your first manuscript to a finished product in your table. And give us a holler. We'll be able to help you out, and we're not going to charge you your firstborn child. Next is, of course, Out West, and Out West is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and general merchandise. Bobby Jean wrote this, can you tell? Yeah. National brands include the Scully Leather Company, Rock Mount Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name quite a few. And they can be reached at 877-340-9378. And if you're interested in their concert series, which is the fourth Friday of every month, give them a call at 661-347-9700. And they'll be able to tell you not only who's playing, but how much tickets are and whether they have any left. Okay. Since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM Truckload, that is the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload experience unparalleled. Call TFM Truckload today at 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski and tell him you heard it on the Writer's Block, and TFM will have a little something extra for you. And if you're an LTL shipper, which is less than truckload, and you're getting your freight moved your way, the most expedient way possible is what you want. One-stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic movement program is the finest in the industry. So call them at 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. Call them today. They're friends of mine. You'll love talking to them. They're really good people. Okay. In the studio tonight, we have the very first guest that was ever on the Writer's Block.
And a badge I wear with extreme honor.
As well you should, because, you know, we've gone from like 500 listeners to over 400,000 listeners.
Wow, I wish you hadn't told me that. I should have combed my hair.
Actually, you're going to start building me now. Okay. We have sitting in the seat of honor tonight, which is Bobby Jean's normally, or Russ's if he's here, Mr. Court Joyner. See, Courtney Joyner is an author, a playwright, a whatever it is that he does it well. And I've read one of his books, Shotgun the Killing Ground. It's a really, really good story. And
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And he's got two of them out now, Shotgun and then Shotgun the Killing Ground. And are you working on a third?
Actually, I am. But what is going to happen is that the first two volumes are actually being combined as one, and they'll be out on the 15th of January.
Uh-huh.
And so Kensington Books has turned me into, at least as far as thickness goes, their Larry McMurtry, this 600-page tome, which I had not planned on writing. And then the third Shotgun book will be out the following Labor Day, and then the fourth is out the following January.
Oh, good for you. That's awesome. And in our other chair, we have Mr. Henry Park of Henry's Western Roundup, blogspot.com. Nope. Did I do that right? No. Western Roundup and Blogspot. www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com. Okay.
And I regret to say I won't be able to do a call-in today.
Oh, does that mean you're not accepting calls? Or you're just
I'm not making it.
Oh, you're not making it. Okay.
Okay, anybody who really, really, really is crazy enough to want to call in and talk to one of these yahoos tonight, the number in the studio here is 818-602-4929. Henry should be able to repeat that by memory.
It's 818 something with a 6. And it's like 6 other numbers.
You just had a birthday, Henry. We understand. 818-602-4929. That rings right here in the studio. And if I can answer it, I will. But sometimes we don't get to it right away, so don't hang up. Okay, let's get started. We've got so much to talk about, especially with Mr. Joyner and Mr. Park. Henry.
Yes, sir.
Do you have a new Roundup out?
Actually,
are you working
I'm going to have one coming up this next week. It's been a very busy time, out of my control, so I'm a little behind, but I will have one, and it will have stuff about Westerns in it, I'm almost sure.
I would bet you. I would put money on that one.
In fact, I'll be having a couple of book reviews, a book review and a couple of video reviews, and there's a couple of very interesting things I've been seeing. I'm not sure when I can review them, only because I don't want to review a movie 6 months before it actually hits theaters.
Right. Yeah. I get that. Can you share with us what's going to be in the blog?
I could if I knew.
Oh, well,
but
no, never.
I'm sorry.
Henry, this is Thursday.
Actually, I'm going to be. Yes, this is Thursday. But actually, it's funny because one of the things I'm going to be reviewing is a book that you actually just interviewed the author of, Michael Druxman.
Oh, okay.
That terrific book of interviews that he originally did for Coronet.
Yes. He's got a new play out too. Golly, it's a two person play. He just sent me a thing on it today.
Eddie Fisher?
No.
Eddie Haskell?
No. You know what? My wife and I were talking about this. We had lunch at maybe it was the margarita that made me forget. I don't know. Who's the guy that used to do the Canadian Mountie, I am calling you?
Come on. Nelson Eddy and Jeanette McDonald.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. No, I want to say, because Mike did that very interesting play about Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi and everybody. And I still... I've done a few signings and things with Mike, and he's so knowledgeable. And his book about the films of Basil Rathbone is still the book on that subject.
You know, Druxman's been on the show twice now. We just love him, Michael. He's just so much fun. And, in fact, he called me about 3 months ago and said, hey, I'm going to be in town on June 8th. And he says, you got room on the 15th show? And I said, no, I got a playwright coming in. He goes, well, you know, can we double up? And sure. You're a playwright, you know. So we had a young lady, I don't know, 23-year-old Chelsea Hickman. Her first play is, you know, hit Washington, and it's hit New York. And she's actually going back to produce the play. And it's a terrific show. It's a one-act, probably 30, 40-minute show. But it's really well done. I love the show. And then he gave her some pointers, and they talked and chatted. And Bobby and I went and got coffee.
Oh, well, there you go.
So how it happens, you know.
Well, that's part of the writer's block magic.
It is. The authors that we've had on this show have been so, so good. And, of course, Court, you've always been a great guest and a great drop-in co-host. And and Henry, you're always welcome. Well, you know that. You both are. So whatever you want to do. So you've got so much stuff in the fire, Court. What's going on?
Well, I've been very lucky with Shotgun, and here from Pinnacle, and just as a mass market paperback, but it's done very well, and we are just now, I guess, officially official that we've made a deal over at with a company affiliated with Universal to do it as a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very pleased about that, and they're going to option the books, and then I'll be writing the script, and then hopefully we'll shoot it in the spring, and we'll see what happens.
And we have a call, and I bet you this is Bobby Jean.
Emailing in about At Westlife.
Hi, Bobby.
Hi.
I know that voice.
Well, guess who's here, Bobby?
I'm sorry, I'm calling into the writer's block. How are y'all tonight?
Well, guess who's here?
Let me see. Do we have Courtney Joyner and Henry Parr?
We do.
You do indeed.
Yes, indeed.
So we have the birthday boy. Happy birthday,
both of them.
Courtney Joyner.
And Henry.
And Henry. I think they're both like 3-4 days apart.
No, one day apart.
One day apart.
Oh, Henry, I'm sorry that I missed that. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank Where's you. The cake?
He's actually officially old now, Bobby.
Oh, you mean he's still younger than us, though?
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately. Hey, how's your mom?
So, did you both do something wild and Western, and in your case, Courtney, also a little weird?
Always.
Did you buy a new poster for your hallway?
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact. Yes, Yes. I'll tell you, I am so thrilled. I actually got a British poster for a double feature. This was just remarkable to me. Of Sam Peckinpah's Straw Dogs was released in Britain on a double feature with Food of the Gods, the Bird Eye Gordon movie with the giant rats. So it's wonderful because there's Dustin Hoffman with a shotgun shooting at a giant rat with a woman in it that's hanging out of its mouth.
I like it.
It's just fabulous. Yes, that goes up in the bathroom.
So we want pictures.
Yes, okay. It's wonderful.
So how's your mother?
And Henry, what did you do? What special thing did you do?
Well, my girls took me out over to Knott's Berry Farm, and we had a wonderful fried chicken dinner there. I didn't know that place became a birthday factory, but my gosh, every table they're coming around singing. They came and described what the candle would have been like in my... what is the pie, the berries they have that they invented there?
I don't know. I've never eaten in that restaurant.
Oh, really?
No.
It's the restaurant. The whole park exists because of the restaurant.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Every time I've gone to Knott's Berry Farm, though, the restaurant has had a line out the door.
Well, that's why they built the park. They built Walter Knott, started putting entertainments up outside the line so people wouldn't quit waiting.
Oh.
And the park just grew and grew over a period of like 50 years. It's like the opposite of Disneyland where everything was planned before they opened it.
Right.
This just grew like Copsy.
Yeah. Yeah. I
Boysenberry.
I used to love Knott's Berry Farm.
He invented the Boysenberry.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yes, he did. Yep.
Wow. There was no Boysenberry before they invented it?
No, there were boys. There were berries. But there were no Boysenberry.
I'm not even going to go there.
Lovely I turn.
Inch by inch, step by step.
Well, I just had to call in quickly, and I know you've got a lot to talk about with a full time ahead, and I just had to call in because two of my very, very most favorite men in the world are with you tonight.
Yep.
And I just had to call and say hello.
Yep. How's Chicago?
Well, we have about 75 degrees today, which isn't that wonderful.
That's what we
like
had.
30 degrees cooler than California.
That's what we had today, about 75.
We have overcast skies. We had a little rain tonight. I'm in heaven.
Well, actually, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful. We had a really nice visit with my mom since we got in. And, of course, it's 9 o'clock here.
Right.
And we have not slept since sometime yesterday morning. This has been a 24-hour thing because the car picked us up at 3 o'clock to get us to the airport for a 5:30 flight this morning. And you know how that all goes. So I just didn't go to bed whatever day that was.
Well,
last
just
night?
More coffee.
So I'm going to bed now.
I don't think you could possibly buzz more than you already are. All right.
So I have to say, Jim, I'm really looking forward to next Thursday night show with the author of the book Bright Midnight.
Right.
I think that's the right title. Oh, my gosh. Have you started reading it?
I have not yet. But as Chris Formant.
And for such a treat.
Well, I mean, I had to finish Jonah Blue first.
Well, I understand priorities are such, but since I'm not reader and I'm not a writer, I'm only a reader.
Right.
You know, right. I can just get right into the next one.
There you go. Well, I can't do that, but that's okay. I'll get the book finished. But that's author Chris Formant.
So, gentlemen, have a wonderful night. I look forward to catching up with everybody. We need some face-to-face in the near future. And I will sign off tonight from the Writer's Block here in Chicago.
Okay. Thanks,
Thank
Bobby.
You, dear.
Great talking to you.
See you next Thursday.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was our roving correspondent.
That was our roving. Yes. And you are there. Or she is there. We're here. Anyway, go back to where we were there, Court. You remember? I don't remember. I'm getting so old.
So, well, anyway, we're hoping that we'll be shooting that in the spring. And also, too, on Christmas Day,
right.
I actually have a fantasy novel. It's a sequel of sorts to 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea called Nemo Rising, and it is Macmillan's Christmas Day release, and it's my first hardback.
That's phenomenal.
So yeah, it's pretty neat, and we're very lucky, and we got all the box stores and Hudson's and at the airport and the whole schmear.
And your pre-sales are going well?
The pre-sales are going very well, and there will also be a board game released simultaneously.
Same time?
Yes.
Wow. I mean, look, you know, we know this guy.
I know. We better get him to sign something.
I know something. He's got to sign something. Actually, I think I have his signature on a book at home.
Well, at least it's not on a bad check. So.
But I think actually Tequila was involved in when he signed that book.
Have fun reading it.
Yeah. I get 60,000 words of tequila musings.
I probably signed a copy of Valdez is Coming.
No, you didn't.
Oh,
actually,
God, I wish this was me. Yeah.
No, actually, you signed, what was it, Shotgun to Killing Ground.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good book. It's a good book. I loved it.
Oh, thank
excellent
you.
Book.
Yeah, it's an excellent book. So, anyway, and Henry, you have got, you're writing still for, the West,
True West.
Real West, True West.
Right.
And doing their film.
Right. Right. I'm their film right. editor, and just finished up a piece on passing of the late, great Powers Booth.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to do a review of it. Do you remember the series Paradise?
Gardner McKay.
Adventures
in Paradise.
No, this
Paradise.
This was a Western series from the early 90s with Lee Horsley and Sigrid Thornton.
Oh, I kind of remember it.
To me, it's the best of the family-type Westerns to come along since The Rifleman. And it has not been seen since it was originally shown and then carbon copied a bit for Dr. Quinn and then buried. But Warner's has brought it out just recently, and I'll be talking about that.
Was it a full season?
Oh, it was 3 seasons.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Paradise.
CBS just kind of hit it.
Lee Horsley. I remember Lee Horsley.
Sure. Matt Houston.
Matt Houston, yeah. Yeah.
And Henry, by the way, is being overly modest because his... astoundingly good article on Slim Pickens is the cover of the current issue of True West.
Oh, my gosh, really?
Why, thank you for pointing that up.
he's a local boy, too, isn't he? Slim Pickens.
Eventually, sure. Yeah.
He was also a saddle maker.
I did not know that.
I have a friend that was his name was Tom Shepard, and his father and Slim Pickens were really good friends, and they used to sit and make saddles together. So a lot of the saddles that he used in the movies, he made.
Well, I know that Slim's father-in-law was Fat Jones.
I didn't know that.
The Wrangler, yeah, and an horse trainer. And, of course, he had been the rodeo clown for a long time. And I believe, Henry, you've done the most research most recently. Was Rocky Mountain his first film?
He had a tiny unbilled part as, you know, a group of writers and something else. But, yeah, Rocky Mountain was his first real part.
Yeah, he's very good. That's a wonderful movie.
That was back when he was skinny.
Yep.
Yeah. They called him Slim back then.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. But he was...
Fat Pickens.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, do you know why he got the name Slim Pickens?
For food.
No, actually, it's he was going to... He really wanted to try riding and rodeo. Uh-huh. Not as a clown, but just as a straight rodeo rider. And his father absolutely forbid it. And so he goes down to the place, he's in his mid-teens, and he's going to register, and he says, oh, I don't know what to do, ma'am, because Dad says that if he sees my name on one of these entry forms, I won't have a home to come home to. And she says, well, why don't you write down your name as Slim Pickens, because that's what it's going to be.
Oh, okay, I get it.
And he did it, and it stuck, and actually he won some money that time.
Did he?
Yeah, about $250, if I remember right.
Back then, it was probably a lot of money.
Yeah.
Rodeo clowns.
Well, when our friend Steve Lodge wrote a very good movie about rodeo. I think it's, along with Nick Gray's The Lusty Men, I think it's just about the best one, really.
Absolutely.
The Honkers. Because it's not sentimental. Like, I love Junior Bonner, and I like J.W. Coop, but they were both kind of soft in their hearts. I mean, they're really family stories. But they were prepping the movie, and Jim Coburn was getting kind of upset because he couldn't seem to find a pair of pants that he felt looked right. And, you know, Coburn was quite tall and thin.
Right.
And Slim came into the dressing room, and he said, well, I know what the problem is. And he pulled Coburn's jeans down to his hips. Now you look like a rodeo rider.
Oh, so he was wearing them.
Yep, wearing them too high and too stylish and everything else. And he had actually insisted upon custom-made jeans because McQueen had insisted upon that for Junior Bonner. You know, those guys always had all these, you know, kind of little competitions going along between each other. But Slim came in to add the realistic touch and got Jim's pants where they should be.
You know, actually, Andrew Prime told me that when he was doing the series Wide Country with Earl Holliman, and Slim Pickens was the technical advisor on rodeo stuff. At that point, Prine had never even seen a rodeo, and he was playing, a rider.
Yeah.
And so he showed up on set, and he had his jeans with the cuffs rolled up. And the first thing Slim told him was that you never do that because you could be, if you're riding a bull, you could get a horn hooked in that.
Yeah.
So he had very well, very good eye for exactly what did and did not go.
Yeah, well, now they wear flak vests, too.
Yep. Is that right?
Yeah, they do. And helmets.
That's
a good idea.
They look like cowboy hats, but they're helmets.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, you know, Slim's daughter they never figured out exactly what gave Slim the brain tumor that eventually killed him.
Mm-hmm.
The family felt that he had been, as a rodeo rider, just fallen on his head and hit in the head so many times, they thought that might very well be the cause of it. So
well, I was
glad to hear about the helmets.
Max Evans' definition of a horse, it's the only creature on earth that'll wait 35 years to kick the hell out of you.
That's true. I have one of those. 6 broken ribs and 2 punctured lungs later.
That's it.
Ooh.
Yep.
Yep. I have a really good friend of mine that actually was a rodeo. He was a world champion rodeo clown. In the early 70s, his name is Seth Dalton, and he had to retire because he got gored in the crotch.
There you go.
And he was hurting for a long, long, long time.
But that was rough business. And was Dub Taylor ever a rodeo clown?
I don't think so. Dub Taylor, maybe.
Seems to me that that's kind of dancing in the back of my memory that perhaps he was. At one point or another.
I know his kid was never a rodeo clown.
Oh, Buck? No.
But, I mean, you know, he was, on horses and Gunsmoke?
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Newly.
Right.
How do I remember this stuff? I'm old. That's how I remember it.
And he is also
a very nice part in Hell or High Water, too.
Yes,
he shows up in so much stuff. He just shows up. I mean, you know, he's not even in the credits in a lot of the times, and he's there.
Yeah. He is also a astonishingly talented artist.
He is.
Good Lord. His wildlife paintings, they're just fantastic.
Yeah, he had a really good part in The Sacketts.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
And he didn't get the comeuppance, but, you know, he was good. I like Buck Taylor in just about everything he does. He's starting to look like an old croom dudgeon, too. You know, he's got that look. He was in One of the Lonesome Dove movies where he was the bear hunter, and they killed his dogs.
That would have been number 2, right?
I don't know if it was number 2. I don't know if it was that one or Comanche Moon or. But they came upon him, and it was the old bear hunter, and they'd killed, and the bear had killed his dogs, or one of them.
Well, I always love to see Dub, and, well, of course, he's the guard for, remember, the boxcar full of sugar in them that gets
that's
ripped
right.
apart by the ants.
That's right, the ants, James Arneston.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And he is the guy who gets shotgunned in the middle of the field in the first feature of Dragnet.
Really?
Absolutely.
I did not know that.
You bet.
And, of course, he's in Bonnie and Clyde. He's
he's fantastic.
The dad of Michael J. Pollan.
Right, right.
He's fantastic.
And
Bonnie and Clyde.
Sets up
Bonnie and Clyde to get ambushed.
Say poor, that's not really true. But they were asking for it.
Yeah. They'd run their course. They were done. They were pretty much done. So you guys have been doing dubbing, and you've been doing voiceover work. You want to tell our listeners, our old 25 of them, what you've been doing?
Yeah, we like to do, or we have certainly done a lot of commentaries for Blu-rays and have been on camera for special releases of movies, particularly the movies that we love. It's always great fun. And I guess most recently, Henry and I did the Blu-ray. Unfortunately, it's only was released in the United Kingdom of the Gordon Douglas release of Stagecoach.
You can hear our accents in it. Bizarre.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
But we've gotten some lovely reviews for that one.
Indeed we have.
Yeah, and so that was great fun. I just, it was on camera. I did Streets of Fire.
Uh-huh.
For Shout Factory, and that was great. The great moment was, and they didn't tell me this, is at the end, my name is in the credit block with Walter Hill. So, of course, I reacted like any man would and burst into tears as soon as I saw it. I kept replaying it about 5,000 times.
Oh, sure. Back up.
Oh, my gosh. I just,
call your friends.
That put me away.
Hey, I got
a
bottle.
Put on a shirt, you know.
Are you kidding? I have
you have a beautiful shirt.
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
it's a Scully.
Is it a Scully?
And it is
from out west.
Absolutely.
Good man. Yeah, we like to support them.
Absolutely.
In fact, we have a chair that Jim supports Jim every week right there, right where you're sitting. So, yeah.
And there we go, yes.
Right. We've also done together commentaries on a couple of Franco Nero's and a couple of Lee Van Cleef's.
Yeah, the Big Gun Down.
Oh, yeah.
There was a guy who did movies that I never even heard of until they show up on the Western Channel, Lee Van Cleef. He just did so much stuff. I never realized how busy that man actually was.
Well, he was, you know, he went through this kind of typical character actor lull. And, of course, you think of, you know, High Noon and
right.
The Big Combo and Kansas City Confidential and these movies in the 50s. The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms.
There you go.
Yeah. But, and, of course, all the TV westerns. And when, but it was just literally fate that Sergio Leone chose him for a few dollars more.
Yeah.
Because he had again offered it to that part to a lot of people, including Charles Bronson, who once again turned him down. And they were just looking around for folks, and they just said, hey, Lee Van Cleef, and Eastwood knew him because he had seen him around Universal, and I'm sure he had done an episode
Rawhide
or two of
Rawhide, yeah.
Sure. And they said, great, and it just worked. But Van Cleef was really the unexpected, you know, star who emerged
right.
from
yeah.
there, because there have been other, that's the thing that Henry and I have talked about on our commentaries, is that there are quite a few actors who had already been in Europe at this time. Cameron Mitchell, for example. Richard Basehart.
Oh, yes.
Stuart Granger,
exactly.
And
they
he was, of course, in Germany, too.
That's right. Shatterhand. But Lex Barker. And,
oh, yeah. Huh.
But that's the thing, is they didn't catch on in this way. And, of course, those movies opened the floodgates for everybody else. And, of course, a lot of European stars as well. But it was interesting that Van Cleef just was literally just another character actor, and then suddenly there he is. He emerges as a true Western star,
yeah.
And just kept up with that image and everything else. And
he just, I mean, his death. He was like the such a total anti-hero.
Oh, completely.
You never knew whether he was going to be a good guy or a bad guy or a little bit of both.
You know, it's a funny thing. Today, my editor from True West emailed to me. an interesting article from the Daily Mirror mm-hmm. in England. They're just starting to show the Robert Redford produced that Western series that was on the History Channel last year, you know, all the historical reenactment stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I forget the titles, like American History of the West or something like that. And they had commissioned a poll to see who English people thought were, the, you know, what were the top Westerns, who were the best actors and stuff like that. And I was very interested to see number four favorite Western actor was Lee Van Cleef. Number five, Steve McQueen.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow.
Of course,
I was like, well, I was always a Steve McQueen fan anyway, from Wanted Dead or Alive all the way up. So
absolutely. I've always been told whenever you can do anything with the Roundup, for instance, if there is anything you can possibly say about Steve McQueen where you can get a picture in,
yeah.
that is your lead, regardless of
what else
happens.
Yeah. I remember when he did Nevada Smith.
Oh. Nevada Smith is a tremendously good movie.
It was probably one of his better movies, undoubtedly.
Yes.
But such a great story, and it was right out of the Carpetbaggers.
That's right, Harold Robinson.
Yeah, and
John Michael Hayes just wrote this great script. And unlike at the time, you know, McQueen was already kind of getting into it with his directors a little bit. Don Siegel, of course, and he had a little bit of a problem on Hell Is for Heroes. But he loved Henry Hathaway. Rather, Hathaway loved him.
Yeah.
And he kind of, and Steve, of course, was always very interested in money, as was Henry. And so Henry would give him financial advice, and they really formed a bond, uh-huh. which was as kind of, it was an interesting thing, because everybody would have expected instant fireworks.
Yeah.
But that just wasn't the case. I think that's it's a wonderful movie.
Oh,
and not one that people reference very often.
Or have seen.
Right.
It was one of those.
Martin Landau's absolutely best roles.
Absolutely. The fight at the cattle yards.
Oh,
my gosh. What a wonderful scene.
And Carl Malden is terrific. And so is Suzanne Plichette.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. As the Indian girl, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. The whore.
Yep.
Can I say whore in radio? Yeah, I guess I can.
Yes.
Soiled Dove.
Soiled Dove. There you go.
And it's the Soiled Dove Hour. Dove soap.
Yes. Brought to you by Palmolive.
There's a line in my new book, Joan of Blue, that his sister, Jonah's sister, has turned out to be a whore. And she's calling herself Lily of the Valley. And at the very end, the big confrontational scene, he says, well, you're Lily of the Valley. You're nothing but a whore. She goes, well, aren't we a pair? She goes, I'm a whore and you're a mountain man with a conscience.
And there you go. Which, speaking of that, by the way, I'm going to plug something that neither one of us had anything to do with. But just very recently, The Westerner finally was released on
Brian Keith.
DVD. Yes.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
Sam Peckinpah's show. And that first episode, actually, the first episode was co-written by a man I wrote a screenplay with when I was in college.
Is that right?
Robert Heverly, yep. And I learned an awful lot working with Bob. But that first episode about the prostitute who does not want to leave her life and instead chooses to be with her pimp, it's astonishing how adult it is and how frank and what they were getting away with censorship-wise and everything else. And that set, I think, is what, like $15 or something? And the show, of course, has been unavailable for
a long time.
For 40 years
or
more. And it's just so worth it. It's just an incredible achievement.
Yeah, it was done in the mid-50s, late 50s.
Very early 60s.
Yeah.
In fact, the Flintstones is what knocked it off the air.
Is that right?
Absolutely right.
Yeah, the West. I remember Brian Keith.
And John Daner.
Well, John Daner. Good Lord, you can't turn on the radio without hearing John Daner.
Mr. John Daner.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Paladin.
Right.
His second Paladin. The first one, of course, was Richard Boone.
That's right. Most people assume the radio show,
was first.
TV, but it was the reverse.
It was the reverse, yeah. And people don't get that. Yeah,
Little Margie, same thing.
Yes. My Little Margie was on the air first, and then they put radio on. However, Gunsmoke was on the air first.
Oh, yes.
William Conrad actually wanted that part, didn't he?
I believe actually he did.
But they said you were too big.
Well, the thing is also with Conrad, of course, he was very short.
Yeah.
And he was so established for movies like The Killers and Body and Soul and things that, of course, it's like you're completely the wrong image and what have you. And
he was another one that his you can't turn on any kind of an old classic radio show and you don't hear William Conrad.
Oh, well, that voice.
He was I mean, yeah, you can't miss his voice.
Now, for my money, William Conrad and Reed Hadley were the two greatest voices in radio.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have to go along with that. I like that. I like Reed Hadley. Although I did think Brace Beamer was not bad for the Lone Ranger.
Yes.
You know, but I really, and then Bob Bailey, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
I love Johnny Dollar. I've got like big sets of that Johnny Dollar. I just listen to that stuff all the time.
So, you know, that was that and Suspense were the very last shows of dramatic radio.
Yes.
They both went off the air.
62.
In June of 62.
Yeah.
Was Suspense also Arch Obler?
No, he was Lights Out.
Arch was Lights Out. I remember that.
Lights Out. Yeah. Yep.
But Reed Hadley had Racket Busters.
Racket Squad.
Yeah, Racket Squad.
Excuse me.
Captain Braddock. Ready.
Yeah.
And, of course, is the cop chasing, good Lord, Broad Crawford, Bill Tallman, Lon Chaney, Charles Bronson, and Ralph Meeker in Big House USA. If you've ever seen that. Oh, awesome stuff. And
Get more manly than that.
No. Or for the horror aficionados, do you remember Reed Hadley as, I believe, the King of Khalid in Brain of Blood?
No.
Co-starring Grant Williams. Yes.
No, I don't remember that.
And, of course, as Jesse James in I Killed Jesse James.
That's right. I shot Jesse James.
I beg your pardon. I shot and killed Jesse James.
Did you shoot Sam Fuller's first film?
I'm sorry?
Sam Fuller's first film as a director.
That's right. And that very weird thing where who gives him the bath?
Is it John Ireland?
Are we getting naked now?
No.
Okay.
I'm still keeping on my Scully shirt.
I have actually never seen I Shot and Killed Jesse James.
I shot Jesse James.
Okay.
It's much better than I Shot Billy the Kid, which is mediocre.
Yes.
And that is a real movie. I'm not making that up.
And then better than Billy the Kid meets Dracula?
That's kind of a
Now, time. Wait a minute now. We're, you know.
I know. I'm getting into your zone right now.
No. But, you know, John Carradine used to always say, you know, that was the worst picture I was ever associated with. No.
Not hardly.
Yeah, John, you know, went down quite a few roads. But the thing is about Billy the Kid versus Dracula, which I just find so fascinating, William Bodine, of course, you know, with all the Bowery Boys movies and all this other stuff and his long association with Monogram, during that period, he was also directing The Naked City.
Oh, he was.
It was like one of the most prestige TV shows you could possibly be associated.
There are 8 million stories in The Naked City, and this is one of them.
Bounced around, and I always say, listen, because he directed a stunning silent Western called The Canadian.
Never saw it.
I believe in what, 1926?
Sounds right.
Right in there. And this was a really talented man, and I often had to rise to his defense when, you know, people are like, oh, my God, I just saw, you know, some
Jesse James awful, meets Frankenstein's daughter.
Yes, or some terrible, Bowery Boys movie or something that he had done, and he was one-shot Bodine. But I always say, listen, who else could claim to direct Mary Pickford, W.C. Fields, Bela Lugosi, and Bruce Lee? Nobody.
It's a short list.
Yes, and William Bodine's name is in it.
Great stuff.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, yeah, he was one of the primary directors on the Green Hornet before he retired.
Oh my God, Grant Williams.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
Van Williams.
Van Williams and Bruce Lee was Kato.
Was Kato? Absolutely.
Yeah. I remember that. That was my time. I mean, early '60s, '50s, '60s.
In fact, aren't they? I think the new Green Hornet movie or am I confused? The new? I know there's either a new Green Hornet or a new Lone Ranger, which we would all hope and pray. But Strundle,
I'm hoping there's not a new Lone Ranger.
They are, in fact, going to finally draw the family heritage between the Lone Ranger and the Green Hornet. Yes.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Britt Reed was the Green Hornet.
Right. And the Lone Ranger was his uncle? Great uncle?
Great uncle.
Great uncle, right.
Yeah, he was. Britt Reed was the son of Dan Reed. His nephew.
Right.
Right.
Wow. How convoluted is that?
But also, there you go. I mean, Cato is Tonto.
Oh, yeah, I suppose, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, they all wore masks. Well, Tonto never did.
No.
I actually watched the other morning. I actually caught on one of the TV stations that you watch, the one Inspiration or something.
Oh,
the Lone Ranger. The Lone Ranger was on right after Roy Rogers.
Right.
It was great.
Oh, that's WHT, World Harvest Television.
Okay, yeah.
They have a great block of Roy Rogers and Lone Rangers.
Yeah, they do. You sit there and I can, with the clicker in my hand, and have a cup of coffee and watch the Lone Ranger.
Something I haven't really liked since I was five. Lone Ranger feature that Warner Brothers did.
1958?
Yeah, that was Stuart Heisler, I think, directed it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was after the series was over with. They made two movies.
That's right.
Yeah.
City of Gold?
City of Gold was one, and then I don't remember the other one.
I think the first one was just The Lone Ranger, and then City of Gold.
Yeah. Legend of the Lone Ranger, or whatever it was.
Oh, later on, yes, with Clinton Spilsbury.
Yes.
Oh. Yes. yes. Revoiced, I believe, by James Keach. Isn't
That's
that correct?
Oh,
yes. My God. What a bad movie. I mean,
what's his name? I was going to say the wrong actor's name who played Tonto. It was Michael Horse.
Michael Horse was good.
Terrific.
Very good.
Yeah.
He gave me a very nice interview.
Did he?
Yes. Actually, that's...
Oh, I think I read that interview with Michael Horse.
Right. Actually, that's going into the book. Have I told you about the book I'm doing?
Yeah. Tell me about your book, Henry.
Thank you. Yes. I am compiling a book of the best interviews from Henry's Western Roundup.
Very cool. And how many years has Court asked you to do this?
How long have I been writing it? Since 2010. So he's been asking me for about 7 years, and my wife has been asking me for about 15 years, which is really confusing.
There you go. Well, I've never asked you. I asked you earlier. When are you going to do it, Henry?
I'm doing it now.
You know, we have a publishing company here. You're sitting right here with one.
Oh, what is it called?
It would be called Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books.
I see. But can you help first-time authors?
That's what we're here for.
There you go.
Outstanding.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
Yeah, we're trying to gather them all in. In fact, I had a guy call me from Bakersfield today, wanted to come out and talk about a book. I have a question for you. Actually, I'm going to throw out some names of movies. I want to get your opinion.
Okay.
Because I'm not going to ask you about Writer's Block. I already know what your thoughts are about Writer's Block. Because this is just a fool around hour. Okay, first one. The Hired Hand.
I love The Hired Hand. I think Warren Oates' performance is so steady and so good. I think Peter Fonda did a really nice job directing the movie, but in a way I kind of wish he wasn't in it.
Yeah.
Because I think it might kind of overwhelm it a little bit, but also who is wonderful in that movie is Larry Hagman.
Yes. And you don't even really recognize him at first. You have no clue. And then you go, that's Larry Hagman.
Yes.
And I really liked the movie.
Yeah.
I think I liked it more for the... Warren Oates was phenomenal in that movie. And I think that was probably at the very peak of his career.
Oh, absolutely. He was very close to Peter Fonda. They were very good friends.
Yeah.
And I believe that, if I'm not mistaken, Vilma Zsigmond shot it.
I don't recall. I just watched it not too long ago. It's just a great movie. The ending is just tremendous.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's really a great ending, and it's just that the whole story is good.
Yeah, it's a terrific movie.
It really is. Okay, next movie. Tom Horn.
Love it,
Henry.
Absolutely lovely picture. It's funny. That's one that I was just talking with Slim Pickens' daughter about, because of course it's. Slim, who has to execute Horn at the end,
right.
Even though he's convinced that he's innocent.
Right.
You know, one of the interesting things about that was that early in his career, Slim met the man, the lawman that he played.
Oh, was that right?
So they had already discussed Horn at great length. Though I don't, you know, historically, do you think that Horn was the innocent man that his defenders claim?
Yeah, I think he was. I think he was set up by the cattleman tried to get rid of him because he was causing him a lot of trouble.
Yes, indeed.
And I think he and the movie was really, really, really good. There was a lot of inaccuracies in it, of course, you know, as of most movies. Like he did not carry a 76 Winchester at the time when all this was going on. He actually owned three 1894 Winchesters 30-30s. Love that gun.
But, you know, the movie, I wish I could work up a little more enthusiasm for it. I think that McQueen's wonderful. But the film, you know, had a very troubled history.
It really did.
And, in fact, Don Siegel was one of the original directors. Right. And McQueen drove him so crazy, he quit. And eventually so did William Goldman, who had written the original screenplay, mm-hmm. which became, of course, I, Tom Horn, which was the David Carradine TV movie, where he co-starred with Richard Widmark.
Yeah, wasn't that called Mr. Horn?
Mr. Horn, excuse yes. me. And it was, yeah, the, I, Tom Horn was the novel. And Mr. Horn, and directed by Jack Sterrett, and it was terrific.
Yeah, for a TV movie, it was pretty good.
Yeah, it really was good. And William Wired was a good director, but he was a TV guy, right. and he kind of came in because everybody else didn't really they had kind of gotten bloodied in the process. And Tom McGuane, of course, wrote a brand new screenplay.
Right. Okay, I have one more for you. And this one, the original Monty Walsh.
Oh, I love Monty Walsh.
1970 Lee Marvin, Jack Palance.
Bo Hopkins.
Yeah, there you go. Great movie. In fact, I just bought it not too long ago, and I just sat and watched it again. It's such a good film. It's such a good film. And those two had such chemistry, even more so than Tom Selleck
Keith Carradine. Yeah,
right. It's,
I should know that. He bought some books from me.
Jean Moreau and everything. It's a wonderful movie. Also because both Marvin and Palance bring it way down.
They really did.
And this was, you know, not too far off from the time of movies like Great Scout and Cat House Thursday and that kind of stuff.
The less subtle work.
To put it mildly. And so to see Lee Marvin kind of settle back into that and just letting this happen. And, of course, the movie previous to this for them was The Professionals.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Huh.
Yep.
Which was a great film.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, yes.
Wonderful film. Okay, we're going to be out of here in just a few. Let's start with Court. Court, where can people reach you if they want to?
Well, I've got my own piddling little website, which is ccourtneyjoyner.com, and I even check in on it. And yes, about every 15 minutes, actually. Did somebody write me? Did someone stumble to it?
Yeah. And Henry.
Yes, you can find me and my work at, Henry's Western Roundup, which is, of course, at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Okay.
And, of course, also check out True West.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, and your website and your email?
This is a long one. Swan Song Mail. It's got Gmail in the middle of it, but it's not a Gmail one because I predate Gmail.
Ah.
SWANGSONG. Wait, I threw an extra G. SWANSONGMAIL at sbcglobal.net.
Wow. And what's
Holy
yours?
Smokes. I'm never writing you.
Mr. Joyner, your
Too
email
much
is?
Trouble.
I'm actually olcourt, OLCOURT, @gmail.com.
Oh, Gmail. Mm-hmm. You used to be Yahoo, didn't you?
And I did. And then I had to get, please give us an alternate email address for I was doing something. I don't know what it was.
Jury duty.
Yeah. Don't call me, I'll call you.
Yeah, I'm trying to, order something from Amazon.
Okay, well, next week we have author Chris Forment. Chris, guys, early in garage bands. Now he holds a seat on the board of the trustees of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Whoa.
All right.
He's written a book called Bright Midnight. It's about a conspiracy between all the deaths of the big guys, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Brian Jones, Jim Morrison, blah, 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 to name a few. And he's going to be on with us next week.
Oh, will you tell him to induct the Monkees, please?
Oh, I love the Monkees. Oh, they were so good.
And, they won't let them in because they say, it's a prefabricated
thing. Yeah, I know. I'd say, what was the Something Brothers did there? Bobby Boyce and Hart. Hart and
right,
Boyce.
Boyce and Hart.
Did their first music, yeah.
So did Neil Diamond.
Yes. Yeah, I'm a believer.
That's right.
Yeah. July 13th, we have Maggie Espinosa. She writes travel books. It ought to be kind of interesting to talk to her. July 20th, we have Jeff MacArthur back on. He wrote Two Gun Heart about Al Capone's brother.
Terrific book.
Yes, it is. Court says you brought it with you.
Yeah, I have it with
me. Yeah, I have a copy at home Jeff gave me, two or three years ago at the Cowboy Festival. Really a good book. July 27th, we have, the book he has, Juki 27th, but it's July. Gary Phillips, who's been on with us before, he does Asian Pulp.
Oh, that's neat.
Gary is a really good guest. He lives down South Central Way, and he's written some really good stuff. And last time he was on, we had a really great conversation with Gary. September 7th, and y'all may, if you want to be here in the studio or call in, we have a two-hour show going on. We're going to be talking to agents about agents, publishers, book printers, and just about everything. And there's a lot of agents out there that are getting some ires from writers, so we're going to start talking about that a little bit and kind of maybe iron some of this stuff out. And that's a two-hour show, so you guys are always welcome to call in on that night specifically. Two exciting new authors are coming to our show. I'm not going to give you the dates yet, but they will be here not until after the first of the year, but not too long from now. Bianca Marais, her book is Hum, if you don't know the words. She has written about growing up in South Africa as a young child during the apartheid era. And that ought to be fascinating. I'm really going to want to talk to her. She has since immigrated to Canada. I don't know exactly where, but we'll find her. And last but not least, we have an author coming in that is world famous, been New York Times bestseller. I was telling Henry earlier that if you go to an airport and one of his books is not in the airport, leave.
Don't get on that plane.
That is John Sanford will be on our show with us. He has written all the Lucas Davenport, the Prey novels, and all of the stuff that accompanies that. And he's going to be on with us sometime next year. I'm not too sure when, but we're looking forward to really having John Sanford on with us. And August 24th this year, we have a return of Craig Johnson, who is, of course, Longmire,
and, absolutely.
He'll be back with us. It'll be his second time on the Writer's Block. We're looking forward to have Craig back with us. And thanks, guys, for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a fast hour. It's gone.
Yes, there you go.
it's amazing how fast bullshit will go when you let it spread.
I know. And nary a drop of alcohol.
And not
no
one.
One. Yeah, I know. No one's going to believe it.
No, I know. Huh? But you know, that doesn't mean we can't do something after the show.
I'm exactly. Yeah.
Waitress, where's my change?
Okay, with that, thanks for joining us another Thursday night here on LA Talk Radio in the Writer's Block. And until next week, we are out of here.